Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
What's good, internet? It is Austin Walker. It is November 18th. I am coming to you live, not from the bunker. We are in a living room that's inside of Vice HQ in Brooklyn. Our bunker is busted today. We tried to record from the bunker. One, I fucked up. Let me be honest. I fucked up and like confirmed that I booked the bunker today, which is a problem. And I remedied it. I booked the bunker out through the holidays, through the holidays of December, not the holidays of November, which is next week. But also, Mitch, our normal engineer, told us, actually, the computer is messed up anyway. We couldn't have recorded there anyway. So now we are in this beautiful living room. And I'm joined, as always, by Patrick Klepek.
Hello. We're also on video this week. Not we for are. You, the see. Listener, but we can see each other. So hopefully, we're trying to cut down on the awkward, you know, handoff. So like, I'm sure if you noticed in some weeks where it's like, and what do you think, Danielle?
Yep. It's hard to do a remote podcast. And speaking of Danielle, Danielle is here next to me on a couch.
Oh, it's so lovely. I slept on this couch during our 72-hour live stream, so it's really nice to be back.
Oh, is this is the one upstairs, like on the third floor?
This is the second floor living room, not the third floor bear room.
Oh, okay.
I also slept in the bear room. There's a bear wearing a Timberlands upstairs.
That's true. The Desus really Amaro bear. The Desus Amaro bear. They have them all decked out. They have them in a Yankee cap. They have them in a fitted. So, you know. It's been a week. It's been another week. We made it through another week.
I'll take it.
Bit by bit, we're going to make it through 2016. We're going to get there. And it's been a weird week for us for, you know, all the normal reasons that it's always weird. But, Patrick, this week, the Sigil Master got in contact with us.
It's Austin. Okay, so let's set this up for people. Not long after I joined Waypoint Vice Gaming at the time, I wrote a story about this ARG happening or at least what was theorized to be an ARG. You know, often ARGs are announced.
Right.
They're sort of commercialized.
An ARG is an alternate reality game, for people who don't know, which is like, it's a game that uses a blend of, like, it's like, what if Lost was a video game? Or was a game? It was like a game in the real world. Lots of weird mysteries, lots of weird, like, ciphers to decrypt, and lots of hidden messages, and it's not really clear necessarily what the narrative is, but you kind of piece it together with a bunch of other people normally on the internet and
build
a story.
It's always sort of transmedia, too. There's always sort of different bits and pieces from, like, oh, there's a clue here, there's a clue there, different stuff is going on.
Yeah.
And weirdly, Lost had its own ARGs, which what makes it even odder. Anyway, I won't go down that road. I'll talk about it for an hour. So I had been noticed in keeping in contact with some folks that were keeping track of these eye sigils that had been found in a bunch of random indie games. That was kind of sort of the connecting thread, was that they were in these independent games. It wasn't, as far as anyone could tell, connected to anything, or at least it was leading to anything. It wasn't, you know, it's not like it said at the bottom, like, and stay tuned for, like, the next eye sigil. And so I mostly just wrote about the fact that it existed, and I thought it was fascinating that people didn't know where it led. Some of the sigils had been the evidence to find them was in the real world, and that led them to what you had to do in the game. So, like, contextually, oftentimes in the games, this isn't something that was found, like, around the corner. Sometimes it was. Other times it was, like, you had to hack into the game or glitch out of the game to find these sigils. And this had been going on for the better part of a year and a half. I think they had found 21 at the time that I wrote about it in August. It had gone up to 24 until recently. And then most recently in Firewatch, they updated the game and added a free roam mode. So people were re-exploring the game. And they found a journal that led them to I don't want to go through every single step. You can read it in a story that went up this week. But the basics is that it led them to a map that allowed them to use the sigils in order to come up with some information that led them to a website that connected them to Frog Fractions 2. Now, Frog Fractions 2 is a game that if you're not familiar with, just go Google search it. But it's a meta game in and of itself. That since its crowdfunding was finished a couple of years ago, people have been wondering when was Frog Fractions 2 going to appear and what form was it going to appear.
Part of the whole thing with Frog Fractions 2 was it went through Kickstarter. It was a sequel to Frog Fractions, which was this really surreal, weird, beautiful, funny game. And kind of the pitch on the Kickstarter was like, oh, I'm going to do a sequel to that thing. I'm going to do a follow-up to whatever Frog Fractions was. And also, I'm not going to tell you what it is or when it's coming or what you're backing. Give me money. I'm going to make something cool. Trust me. And then it'll be out in the world one day.
All part of the mystery.
All part of the mystery. And so people have been waiting and asking us, asking everyone. Twitter is filled with people going, is this Frog Fractions 2? Whenever anything new or weird shows up, it's like, oh, this must be Frog Fractions 2. But that's almost become a joke, whereas the sigil stuff, the people on the sigil stuff, the people who are investigating that, have treated it a lot more seriously, like almost as if it's not just a joke. Like, obviously, they understand it's a game, but they're having, like, their interest in it isn't just the way people are interested in Frog Fractions 2. They're, like, really dumping themselves into it.
Yeah, no, they've been invested emotionally and time-wise for, you know, a long time. One of the guys I've been speaking with, you know, he has built tools, spent dozens of hours building tools for them to try and figure out how all this stuff fits together. And so now, you know, there's speculation that this has crossed over with Frog Fractions 2. Was this sigil ARG always part of Frog Fractions 2 the entire time? Crucial to that is that some of these games that were updated with some of these markers they weren't just like updated like Firewatch where like, ooh, there's a patch. Now there's something hidden to discover. Like there were games that had these sigils for years, literally years, and were discovered much after later after the fact when people were pointed in that direction. And so when I've been reporting on this, I've been getting it's hard to sift through the noise, right? So I would get some people sending me like random emails or weird tweets. And there was one in particular in which I got this tweet from, I don't know if he was called the Sigil Master at the time, but he sent me an Eye of Sauron image. Right. I was getting emails that said, I have to go back and find them and see if they were related to the Sigil Master, but it was someone who appeared to be participating in the ARG, and I thought it was just a joke because someone was, you know, up on the lore of this ARG and was just trying to mess with me. And I would share the information with the people that were investigating the ARG, which is, if you want to know more, go to Game Detectives on Reddit. They follow all these ARGs, and when these breakthroughs happen, they are largely responsible as a collective for figuring this stuff out. And so I kind of brushed it aside, but when we published this new piece, I was contacted on Twitter by someone saying, you need to contact me on AIM, and he called himself the Sigil Master. I was busy
on AOL Instant Messenger.
Which for some reason, Austin, like, can't get over the fact that like I still use AIM as a client, like bundled in with my other messaging. So, like, this has been a hang up all week where you're like throwing like not subtle shade at me that like I still use AIM as a client.
If you still use AIM, write us at gaming@vice.com with the subject letter, I still use AIM, and we'll read your stories on air.
It'd be much weirder if you use ICQ than if you use AIM.
That's true. Well, like, heads up, the AIM app on iOS, pretty good. Nice. Which is a thing I had to learn because we had to go on AIM to talk to the Sigil Master this week.
Well, so you started talking to him first because I was busy sort of like chatting with people about my story having published. And so you jumped to the gun and started talking to him for me. And you got
Patrick, when someone called the Sigil Master calls, you pick up. You pick up and you say, I'm going to talk about this to the Sigil Master about... I said hello and his response to me was, are you the chronicler? And I said, no, I am his mentor and annotator. And I know I'm not your mentor, but I couldn't come up with a better role-playing game word for editor. So I said, mentor and annotator. And he said, and what do they call you in your realm? And I said, Austin. And he said, ah, very good, Austin. Which is like, yep, good. I think he also threw some. Actually, I threw some Trump shade in this hot role play we did. I asked him what his realm was called, and he said long ago it had another name, but today I believe it is known as Jixandlia. And I said, excellent. I live in a place called Queens. And he said, a monarchy then? And I said, more and more one every day. So
nice.
We're moving.
You're a good annotator.
I do my best.
Yeah, I'm a good chronicler and annotator.
So we ended up having both of us have now since talked to this guy.
Yeah, and so we passed on our sort of yeah.
Well, I think I know who it is.
Okay,
but
okay.
Anyway,
gotcha.
Yeah, so
gotcha.
We passed on our the conversations we both had were intricate enough that we thought, well, we should, done as I've done in the past, pass this on to the people who have been doing this. And if there's anything to help them further this ARG along, hopefully they can discover it. So we both passed our transcripts along to them, and they immediately started picking up on either this person is so deeply entrenched in the ARG happening for Frog Fractions 2, because some of the things that were referenced sounded as though, like, you had to been very careful. This isn't someone just screwing with us. If they are screwing with us, they're screwing with us on a level that is a little bit disturbing, how much they know about these ARGs that are happening. And then I'll let you pick up the story from here, but like, then you got something that proved this isn't, all along. I don't know if the older stuff was also this person, but you got some information that proved it was actually legitimate and not just a random prankster.
Right, so the thing that had happened in the... I fell in deep. The other night, I was having one of those late nights that was just like, I'm thinking about the world, I'm thinking about life, I need to focus on something that isn't
thinking
politics.
About the monarchy, yeah.
Right, I'm thinking about the monarchy, thank you, Danielle.
Yep.
So I joined the Game Detectives Discord server. For people who don't know, Discord is like a chat client. It actually reminds me a lot of like a really... high quality or like multi-featured IRC.
It is modern IRC, absolutely.
Pretty
it's
much.
The best analog.
And so the Game Detectives channel has like 5,000 people in it, and it's subdivided into a bunch of sub-channels. So I joined the ones on the Sigil ARG and on the Frog Fractions 2 one. And I'd given them some of the, like you said, the transcripts. But in those places, people were like, well, this could just be a troll, like you said. And then because people were doubting him, we think... He got back in contact and basically said, listen, I understand some people might be doubting me. I understand why they might be doubting me. You should – the sigils are telling me, or whatever, the smoke is telling me that you should investigate something called Bit Block or something like that, which is an iOS and Android game. And if my first instinct was like, oh, damn it. I hope this isn't just the developer of that game trying to get super weird viral marketing, like trying to jump on the back of a different ARG.
Well, and because there have been with the Sigil ARG developers who have put in fake sigils that were not actually part of the ARG. So that is a legitimate concern.
Totally. And so I popped it into the Discord channel. I was like, oh, I feel weird about this. Like, I hope this isn't just a dev who's trying to cash in. That would be really shitty. And then within 10 minutes, we'd found the sigil. It was hidden. It was just like in the menu screen. And the version that I had was from a year ago, literally a year to the day that the Sigil Master told me to look at it. It was like November 16th, 2015 was the last update on iOS. And the way you got the – so with all these sigil things, first you have to find the sigil, and then you have to find the second thing, which is a piece of a map, which blah, 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 blah. Huge thing. Read Patrick's story on waypoint.vice.com. But you to get that map piece, you had to like mess around with the buttons and the options, which eventually would play Ode to Joy, and then there'd be buttons on the main page, like the main menu of the game. You'd have to learn how to play Ode to Joy on that, and then it gives you the piece. And it was a redundant piece. It was a piece of the map that they'd also put in another weird little game. And after that, everything kind of like has continued to kind of snowball, and people are from the Frog Fractions and the Sigil ARG are now kind of collaborating. There was some resistance at first. I think the Sigil people really wanted it to be a different thing. They thought it was going to be
something new.
The people in that Discord channel and on the Reddit keep talking about it being like, oh, it's going to be a big thing. And I think there's a certain expectation when you have all of these different devs. It's like, oh man, this is going to be a huge. I don't even know what they're imagining necessarily, but it's been really
kind of thing.
Yeah, it's been fascinating to see the community's response as they've gone from it being thinking it might be one thing to learning what it actually is, and like having a bit of doubt, and then kind of be like, oh, but this is still a fun mystery for us to solve, and so it's been really cool to see that happen.
Yeah,
yeah, I can understand the disappointment being that Frog Fraction 2 has become a meme and sort of like, yes. Well, of course it's going to be that. And but also people saying that because they were hoping it wasn't, in a way.
Yes.
And so if the answer actually is Frog Fractions 2, well, that is cool. I can understand why people would say, oh, I kind of thought it would be not the thing that is not, it's not obvious, but it is the most obvious in that sort of realm.
Yeah, yeah. Plus, it's just like you want to have as many mysteries as possible. You want like two different cool things to be working on, not just one.
Right.
So, but it's a really complex thing. It's fascinating to read about. There's lore. There are multiple like sides that go against each other.
So good.
I spent the week role playing with someone, and for me, one of the fascinating things here too is just like, how much do we get involved as members of the press? Like, Danielle, you told me some information you know because you know people who happen to be involved at certain levels, and I didn't tell that to the community because, like, that's not part of the game,
yeah,
right?
You don't want to ruin it for people. That's kind of part of – you want to cover it, and you want to do it diligently. You want to do it thoughtfully, but you also don't want to, like – ruin the mystery for people before there's sort of an aspect of...
Yeah. I mean, I definitely had some moments this week saying to myself, like, should I even be engaging with the Sigil Master?
Sure.
Is that within the confines of the structure of the game? Does that count as part of the game, or are we going weirdly...
Do you have privileged access to parts of the game? Other people don't have parts of, you know,
right.
Even though they've been working on it for so long, and we're just, you know, jumping in here at this point.
At this last minute to grab, gotta grab the glory.
Yeah.
Well, but I think, yeah, but I could see why the, you know, let's assume that it, you know, it's the game creators manipulating and working through us. I think the reason they would choose to do that, and then the reason I don't know how I feel about it, but I can understand why they would choose the two of us to do it, because A, we've followed along, so they know that we have you know, an authoritative voice on the subject, and so that if they want, you know, let's say they're trying to work towards an end game, which my gut kind of tells me that's a little of what's happening here. You know, if you want to pass on information to the people who are going to do something with it in a way that is playful and fun, and a little bit in the spirit of it, but isn't just like, hey, like, here's information. You know, how do you...
Here's a trailer.
Right.
Here's a press release.
And, like, speaking to reporters that have covered this in a cryptic role-playing fashion is a kind of funny, interesting way to pass on that information. Because then it then contextualizes our transcripts, where then everything they've said is possibly... Like, so, for example, we haven't published these transcripts because at this point we'll just wait to see where it goes. But in both of ours, there is a reference to a place called, Jinxlandia, I think,
Jinxandlia.
Jinxandlia?
Because it's Andlia, because people have gone down the rabbit hole of trying to figure out if there is anything in the world that has a character named Jix and a character named Leah. So it might be Jinxandlia. That is literally... I'm deep in it, Patrick.
Yeah,
so
deep
many
in
levels.
It.
But so some of the speculation is that, you know, because the reference is that there's a portal to this place. So people have been wondering, is, you know, the actual reveal of Frog Fractions 2 around the corner? Has this all been Frog Fractions 2 the entire time?
Right.
And I think the assumption that it's going to be like a piece of software that you play is maybe not necessarily how this was all going to play out. But I don't know. It's fascinating. And, yeah, I have conflicted feelings about being a part of it, but I think we've tried to hopefully play our part in as impartial as possible and just be communicators. Because, like, you know, as someone that, you know, regularly, like, reports things and scoops things, that's not how I would want this to play out. Like, I want to be a participant that makes it more fun for the people involved. When it comes to, like, spoiling things, if you even want to call it that, like, this isn't something that you would want to do. This is something that is a beautiful, weird thing that should have its own beautiful, weird end.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So that's been our, like, most absurd part of our week.
Yeah.
I feel like we're living with it. Maybe by this time next week we'll know a little bit more. Or maybe we'll go through the portal. Who knows? Who knows? But while we've been doing that, Danielle, you've been on vacation.
Yeah.
But not really.
Not
because
really.
I've actually been making you work.
Not really.
It's a weird vacation.
I've been a metaphorical vacation.
Yes.
You have not been using your vacation days, and I have not been saying, take your vacation
take some
days,
time.
But come in. Just to be clear.
Yeah, just so everybody knows, I'm at work every day. I have taken a psychic vacation in some ways. At least during the time where I sit down, I turn my 3DS on, I open it up, and I go to the mystical land of the Alola Islands for Pokemon Sun and Moon. I'm playing the Moon version. My girlfriend took the Sun version. You know,
right. That's how it happens.
And, and she also took Litten, so I had to go with Popplio. So just so you know, we also tweeted this. We are a pro-Popplio publication.
I'm not anti-Litten. I'm not anti-Rowlet. I love Litten. I love Rowlet.
Yeah.
They're adorable.
You can be a pro, all of the above.
That's all
I'm
saying.
This is a magical world of the Alolas. So, it's okay.
Yeah.
We can love all of them. It's a really good traditional Pokemon game. You know, there's a little bit of a twist on it. Mostly, the setting is new. This is a tropical, lush, beautiful island. It's basically Hawaii. You know, people say Shaka, which I think means cousin or family. I could be wrong. One of those two, you know, to say, to greet you, that sort of thing. Everything has waterfalls and beautiful, you know, lush vegetation. There's also a little bit of a mixing in of the mechanics in terms of there are trials. Instead of just getting sort of your gym badges, you go through these trials. There's actually like a little tiny semi-little Pokemon Snap sort of mini game.
Ooh.
There's sort of different mini games that you go through as well as battling. So they definitely did a little bit new. It's still, structurally, it's still, you're still going to the different places.
So how many Pokemon games have you played at this point? Because I'm someone who played Red, and then, okay, so this would be my third too. I played Red, then I stopped playing until X.
Sure.
And then now this. And maybe I played Blue, I don't remember. Anyway.
You played some of them. I came to Pokemon, because I think I was just over the cusp when Pokemon came out. I feel like it was like 1998 or so when like it was really, really big. You know, there were certainly some people, 96, 97, that were into it, but like when it became like the thing that kids did, and that's when I started high school. It was 1998,
right.
So I like just missed it as like the thing that kids do. So I never played a Pokemon until Alpha Sapphire, which was 2 years ago.
Okay.
And I became utterly obsessed. I played 120 or 130 hours of that game.
Oh,
I had multiple level 100 Pokemon. Like,
you were like committed.
I was so, and I would bring it everywhere. And like, you know, there was one point, there was Christmas of 2014. I went to see a movie in the movie theater and I was like working out in the movie theater, doing wall sits, playing Pokemon. That's how obsessed I was.
Of course you were. Of course, that is a stereotype.
What movie was this?
It was that Into the Woods Hollywood production.
Okay.
Yep.
It was happening while you were doing...
No, it was when I was waiting to get into the movie.
I see. I was confused.
I had to use my time. I was like, I got to get a little workout in. I got to get some Pokemon in. I got to get my popcorn. I'm in the wrong business.
You're in the wrong business.
So, you know, it was very, very... It was a weird inside joke. Sorry. Yeah. It doesn't
I've written
play
about that joke. People have heard that joke
Okay,
from
as
before,
long as they've heard it, they know, they know what it's about. Okay, good. So, yeah, I got obsessed with that. My girlfriend, she enabled all of this. She gave me Alpha Sapphire and was like, hey, maybe you should try a Pokemon since you've never played one. And then immediately for my birthday, so my birthday is not long after Christmas, it's in early February, she bought me Pokemon X. So then I played like 100 hours of Pokemon X. So I love the new, sort of the recent generation of Pokemon games.
Mm-hmm.
Because Alpha Sapphire... also with Omega Ruby, was sort of made
of
after X and Y with all the niceties of it. Because it was a remake of earlier games, and I'm not sure. I guess it was just Ruby and Sapphire, I think.
Originally, and then Alpha, Omega.
And they made them all nice and modern on the 3DS.
Names are tough.
Names, especially with Pokemon games, are tough. So Pokemon S&M, which I'm very much enjoying now. I'm sorry, but Nintendo's names lately are a little...
Switch, S&M.
A little...
Wow.
You know, don't kink shame.
I'm not.
I'm
not, never.
But, you know, it's really good, though. And it really is a very happy and pleasant vacation. It's very much, you know, comfort food. You know, I know people say that a lot, but it's kind of the right kind of comfort food right now, since it's, you know, these games have always been very cute and friendly. They're definitely child-friendly. But even as an adult, I was almost 30 when I played the first one.
Right.
It's
still like a nice retreat,
warm, comforting place.
Definitely a whole like style of game that does that for me. It's one of the reasons why I keep trying to give myself time to go play Dragon Quest Builders.
Yes,
it's like game seems like it would be a fantastic escape for me. A couple of years ago, in 2014, my game of the year was actually Fantasy Life, which was this really
perfect.
Great 3DS like kind of like live-work action RPG. It was like sort of in the vein of a Dragon Quest game in terms of tone, really funny writing, and then like you picked a career path. Like you could be a blacksmith or you could be a hunter, and you kind of went up the career path, and it was just like totally benign, clever, a great way to go to a game during a time that was really rough.
Yes.
And not just escape, but like, because I don't think maybe that's far enough. Like one of the things I like about games like this is that they can push you to imagine a slightly different world.
Yes. Yes.
You know, when I talk about why I like fantasy life, I think it's for the same reason a lot of people like games like The Sims, which is like, oh, I can imagine a world in which putting in effort always returns success.
Yeah,
right?
This is how I feel about Animal Crossing as well.
Totally.
And I've totally talked on like Idle Thumbs and Idle Weekend a little bit about this, but you know, there have been times in my life, like recently when I went through it, it was a difficult move to come to New York, and I played so much Animal Crossing. Just
right.
So much.
Moving to a new town, meeting new people.
Exactly.
Also.
People are getting along, and it's nice, and things are okay.
It's a nice
Not just comfort food gaming, but also there's like nutrition to it. It's like
Yes. It's
whole wheat macaroni and cheese.
I see. That's a good analogy. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
You got there.
Yeah.
Nice.
Now we're there. I'm very happy.
Oh boy. I expected that we would talk about Dishonored 2 today also, but I feel like we don't have the time to dig into Dishonored 2.
No, there's like I've played a
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Lot of it. I'm like 8 hours in dealing with the inconsistent frame rate, but just I can't stop because it's Dishonored.
I just got through the hospital, so I'm like 5 hours in.
Yeah, I'm about to, and I'll save my thoughts on it till Monday. But I'm about to get to the first like sort of the level, one of the levels that everyone has been talking about in that game. It's called Clockwork Mansion.
Is that okay? So I think we might be nearing the same point. So maybe we'll try to catch up. And
I'm a couple of areas ahead in the next level, so you're probably maybe 2 hours behind where I'm at.
Okay. And Danielle, you haven't started it quite
yet? I haven't started
yet.
I have it loaded up on my PS4 this weekend is when I'm going to have a nice Dishonored weekend.
All right. So then next Monday, let's come back around and like we're going to have a Dishonored talk. Like I'm writing it down. I'm going to demand that we talk Dishonored 2 on Monday.
It's homework.
I'm giving us homework again. Let's talk about Dishonored 2. Okay. I'll try to get to a point that we could talk about it. Because there's a lot to talk about, I think. Until then, though, we should before we go this week, we should probably read a question from the old question bucket. I'll pull one up from the bucket.
When we eventually do the, you know, I'm looking at you now. We're in video form for ourselves. When it is in actual video form, whenever we get around to trying to do this live, you're gonna have to print out the questions and pull it from the bucket.
That's perfect.
We need a bucket. Yeah.
Adam, who is doing our engineering today because we're not in the bunker as usual, can you give me a number from 1 to like 30?
All right, I have it. Do you want me to say it?
Yeah, say the number.
17. Thank
you. There's a bucket of questions.
Edge of 17 is perfect.
We're going through here. Also, prepping an actual bucket would be a lot easier than prepping this document. So.
That's true.
Oh, boy. This is a very specific question. This is not timely. This isn't pegged to anything. This is what you get with a bucket. It's from Daniel. Daniel says, "Hey, I'm really pleased you've got this started up, and I'm really looking forward to checking in with you both. This came in before you were here, Daniel.
Oh, man.
This is probably from July or August.
Pre-Daniel era.
I've fallen down a weird, extremely serious Star Wars The Old Republic binge, like a lot. And I'm pretty sure I remember you mentioning that Knights of the Old Republic 2 might be one of your favorite games ever? There's lots of question marks here.
Like the enunciation here.
Yes. I'd really like to hear some of your extended thoughts on it. Well,
extended. Not just thoughts. Extended.
Yep. So if you know there's a place that you can point me to for that, I'll happily take it. But if not, do you think you could talk a little bit about it on a podcast at some point? It's been a thing I've wanted to ask you for a couple of weeks, but I don't know. But I know how busy you are, and it didn't really feel appropriate.
That's very nice. Thanks, Daniel.
It's great. I feel sort of bad because I don't know how much it gives Patrick to talk about. But if part of the appeal is its moral ambiguity, how do you think that stacks up against the stuff that's done in Witcher 3, which I think Patrick has spent a lot of time with recently-ish?
Yes.
And Danielle has too, obviously.
Yes.
Thanks for taking the time to read this anyway, even if it doesn't get answered. Really looking forward to seeing and hearing more from both of you in the future. Best wishes, Daniel.
I really enjoy that. In his question, he felt bad that I might not have anything to say, so he, like, found some, like, roundabout way to pull
me in.
That
was really sweet.
Yeah, that was really good. That's a damn good question. That's a good way of doing the question.
Yeah.
We don't have time to do that question justice, but we'll try in the next 5 minutes. But we'll see if anybody kicks us out of this living room. If no one kicks us out, I'm going to keep going. I'll talk about Knights of the Republic,
Friday,
too. Yeah, exactly. So I've written a little bit about why I like Knights of the Old Republic 2. It's a game that I don't like to talk about as that much, even though it's one of my favorite games, if not my favorite game. Because the second you talk about it, like Dark Souls 2, like Metal Gear Solid 2, all of which are my favorites in their respective franchises, you're on the defensive.
Sure.
Because people immediately don't trust you because your take, your like experience doesn't line up with most other people's. But the thing that I like about Knights of the Old Republic 2 is literally the same thing I like about Dark Souls 2 and about Metal Gear Solid 2, which is that like it undermines the not just the established canon, but like the established the expectation of the viewer or the player. You know, Metal Gear Solid 2, there's a fantastic essay that I'll shout out every time I mention it. It's called Driving Off the Map, and it's by Jake something. I forget his name. I'm really bad at remembering names right this second. His Twitter picture is of a bird. That's...
Good bird.
Fuck, yeah. I can't believe I forgot this guy's name. It's a fantastic essay, and that's literally all about how Metal Gear Solid 2 isn't, like, subverts the expectations of the player who has played Metal Gear Solid 1. And for me, Knights of the Old Republic 2 does the same thing with not only Knights of the Old Republic, but also with the entire Star Wars mythos. It is by Obsidian, who constantly puts out really interesting and often really buggy games. When it shipped, it was unfinished. It literally went to like text instead of cutscenes at the end to kind of give you the what the ending was, and it was cut off, and like it has lots of problems. But despite that, I think the characterization done in it, and specifically some of the work that's done establishing characters who are meant to evoke but also complicate traditional Star Wars like archetypes is really good. So like you have your Obi-Wan Kenobi style character in that game who is your super expert in the Force, who knows everything not just about the Force but about the world, and who has an understanding of the broader political spectrum, but also she is constantly not trying to teach you how to be a better Jedi, but is trying to teach you to constantly doubt the world and yourself. She's like, what if Obi-Wan Kenobi wanted Luke to, instead of saying, like, Luke, you have to leave the moisture farms to go off state and save the world, she's like, why? Like, what's...
Think about why.
Think about why.
Yeah.
Think about what you, why you want to leave here to begin with. What have you been... What's... What... Who taught you that leaving was better than staying? Who taught you that there was something good out there? And so it engaged with all that stuff in a way that I think the best extended fiction Star Wars, extended universe Star Wars stuff did, where it's like, Jedi are kind of like self-imposed religious fanatics who decided that they get to be sheriffs to the entire universe. No one elected them to that power. And then that story, the story of Star Wars, is literally about different religious fanatics like taking over the universe, even though no one wanted them to do it. But we're supposed to expect that, like, we're not supposed to apply any sort of critical thought to the reason that Jedi do that. Like, it's just like, oh, well, they're good, so they're allowed to do that. They work inside of the system without any, democratic authority. But whatever, they're the good ones. And so it at least tries to deal with that stuff. And I don't know. It even, like, the villains are all fantastic. It has my favorite line in a game, I think, ever, which I'm going to spoil. I'm going to spoil Knights of the Old Republic 2 here, which is the bad guy, one of the bad guys, one of, like, the evil Sith lords, the subtitle of the game is The Sith Lords, is a guy named Darth Nihilus, which is like the most fanfic name ever. I understand. It's like the most, like, I took a philosophy 101 course and now I'm going to write Star Wars.
Or that came out of a generator somewhere online.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. And the thing with Darth Nihilus is he would go from planet to planet. He has this like huge, almost like an undead ship. Like, it's a ship that had been, I believe, reclaimed from this huge war previously. And it's just like him and one or two other people on it, or like a handful of other people on it. And it would go from planet to planet and he would drain the planet's life forces from them one after another after another. And he's built up over this huge course of the game. And then you have a boss fight with him and you kill him. And depending on who you have on your party and how you handle the conversation afterwards, Vsauce, who is this kind of like blind Jedi monk, can go up to him and remove his mask. And you can be like, well, what do you see? Because you're imagining like he's this weird alien who sucks the life force out of things. And she's just like, he's a man. Like, he's just a man under there. Like, yeah. And yeah, of course. Like, of course, the things that hurt us are people. Like, it's not, you weren't going to find the void under there. You weren't going to find, like, yeah, the thing that's moving around and causing irreparable environmental damage to the universe, it's a dude. It's a guy, and yeah. it's like the people who are willing to work with him instead of stand against him. And that's, like, a really fascinating take on villains that, when that game came out, you didn't see a lot in video games. Like, it would have been a big bombastic boss fight where he would have, like, broken off into, like, six tentacled arms. Right. And it stands in contrast to the big boss fight at the end of... I mean, it stands in contrast to that game's own final boss fight, which is literally an evil Jedi with six lightsabers that float all around her. But the end of it is really rushed. The end of that game is really rushed. I've since played the version that has gotten better. There's like a fan mod called the Sith Lords Restoration mod that adds in stuff that was literally on the disc, but that the developers didn't have time to add in bug fix and like QA. And so they've done that. So there's like a whole new big thing at the end of the game. There's a more comprehensive ending. So if you're going to play a version of that game, play the version with the Sith Lord Restoration mod. That said, I think it's a different thing than The Witcher 3 to pivot to Witcher 3's sort of like moral ambiguity. That moral ambiguity has always been part of The Witcher, from my understanding. Like, as a book series, as a fictional setting, it's always been about a guy who goes from place to place and who is looked down upon, but like has a job to do and does it, and like kind of walks through these like, you know, gray areas of life. Though I guess my understanding is Ciri is also just way more important in the books than she has been in the games. Right.
Yeah.
So maybe I don't know enough about her as a character.
She's certainly in the third one.
Yeah, totally.
A fair amount.
But yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think that, like, that's a game that is, from, like, my experience playing, is, like, it's executing on its mission plan, which is, like, and on the mission plan of The Witcher in general, which is dig into moral ambiguity, have interesting monsters that reflect society, and you know, there's a little bit of, like, man is the real monster here stuff. Yeah. Always
it's already subversive, whereas in a Star Wars universe, which is already, like, the most black and white kind of representation of a fictional universe, it's, like, way more subversive.
Right. So I guess, like, it's, like, shitty 19-year-old punk Austin who is, like, well, I like the one that's actually subversive more than the one that's, like, always meant to be subversive, man. What about you, Patrick? Like, is that element of gray morality part of what attracts you to The Witcher? The sort of, like, oh, right, you go to a town and they say they have werewolves, but what they really have is a bunch of, like, shitty dudes.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the Red Baron quest in Witcher 3, without getting to sort of the specifics of how that plays
bloody,
out.
Bloody Baron, the Red Baron.
Oh, Bloody quest. Baron. Different guy.
It's a, no, that's right, that's Battlefield 1.
It was in the DLC.
Okay, oh, yeah, we'll get there.
The part of the arc of that quest is, you know, someone who is a sort of a consummate monster. And I mean, at the end, you know, it's very easy to still feel as he is a monster. And I certainly felt that way at the end. But the game also gives you context and an argument for why a monster might act monstrous.
Right.
And it's not, depending on how you play the character, you can, like, you know, give dialogue that expresses, hey, man, like, what you still did was wrong, but I can sort of see it. Or you can do dialogue that is, hey, you're still a piece of shit, regardless of your motivations for that. And those are the moments in that series that I find to be the most interesting, are when they take characters that are presented one way and most games would leave it there. And instead they go, you know, 10 steps further and say, well, you know, often, you know, monsters aren't just monsters. Like, they're a couple steps removed for that. And, like, well, how did they arrive at that point where they're committing acts that are inexcusable? And the Bloody Baron is just a phenomenal example of that. And where at the end, you just feel gross all around. Mm-hmm. Even if you end up taking a position on sort of the actions of the characters, like, no one comes out looking great. And those are some of the most interesting storytelling opportunities in which you just sort of, you know, as it goes in sort of the construction of The Witcher and the construction of that universe, like, you come in, you play it a part, and then you walk away. Like, you didn't really solve anything. Right. You know.
It does it without false equivalencies as well, which is the most important thing. We're going to do the moral gray areas, mm-hmm. but you're not doing, they're just as bad.
Right.
It's like everybody has some shades of bad in there. Everybody has some shades of gray, but it's like, it's not like, They both suck.
Gotta hear both sides.
Who cares? Yeah, it's like a very, you know, it's much more nuanced than that, and I appreciate that so much.
Yeah, like, I think that there's probably a version of that quest that would have appeared in a different game, where it ends with you either killing the Bloody Baron yourself, or, like, he knights you, and now you're a member of his entourage.
Right.
Like,
right.
And instead, the end of that quest is like, well, how do you feel about all this? Like, what do you think? And, like, that is a really fantastic way of doing that. I hear there's more of that stuff throughout
there
the DLC. The Blood and Wine DLC is up for Best RPG this year at the Game Awards. Those nominations just went out. I really need to play Blood and Wine so really badly.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. Maybe. That's a really long DLC.
No, Patrick,
it's another game. I mean, that's why it's
yeah. You can say that in the same way I can say, man, I should really get around to playing Knights of the Old Republic 2. Let's be honest, like, that's just not going to happen. No. I'm not going to play that game.
Ain't gonna happen. We'll have to figure out a solution for the games that we really want to play but can't make time for. You know, the old solution at Giant Bomb was always just like, well, if you can't figure out how to do it, make it work. Like, find a way to make it part of your job, and we're working on some stuff.
Well, and especially because KOTOR 2, the modding community went and basically fixed that game. They did a bunch of work on the PC version to get it closer to what Obsidian had always meant it to be, and I've heard they did, like, a really fantastic job.
They did a fantastic job, and that version, that mod is just on Steam now. It's super easy to integrate, so it's totally worth checking out if you're going to check out a version of it. It goes on sale fairly often too, as the Star Wars games do. So I definitely recommend it. I like with the you know, the caveat that if what you want is a traditional Star Wars story, and I understand places for that, I understand why you would want that. Like, KOTOR 2 is not going to be that. I wish more games took that step and said, like, hey, or you know what, it happens every now and then. I think, like, Amnesia: A Machine for Pigs was also, like, a sequel that was not quite the thing that people thought it was going to be, because they took that idea and were like, oh, let's build a completely different thing that's interesting in its own right, but might not be what the fans of the original wanted.
Yeah.
You know, that happens. I like it when that happens. What else I like is that it's almost the weekend. By the time you hear this, it might be the weekend. It will probably be the weekend.
Just about the weekend.
And we can sleep, and we can await more messages from the Sigil Master.
Oh, man.
We can, I
don't know if I'm going to sleep. That's never a guarantee for me these days, but I will lay in a bed and get up occasionally.
Are you guys doing anything else over this weekend? Is there anything you're excited for next week?
What is Final Fantasy is not next week, right? It's the week after.
I don't know. What is coming out next week?
No, Final Fantasy is the week after.
Okay, that's the thing. Is like, I would love to play Final Fantasy this year. When? What?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to try to play a little bit of it, but...
When I saw
Pokemon on an ambulance tonight, that's going to happen.
Shouldn't you be doing other stuff on the ambulance?
And, you know, when there's not a patient.
Okay.
I'm not going to be like, hold on.
I got to catch
gotta
this.
Get this.
What happens if there's a legendary that shows up, like a shiny?
I mean,
and someone's like, oh,
somebody's like bleeding,
and then they're like, oh, get it, it's a shiny.
Yeah,
I'll be fine.
You know, they'll understand. You know, patients have patience; they will understand.
Nice, good.
You know how it is.
Let's see. I don't know if I'll get a chance to play it, but I would want to play, and I would encourage people to play. The Amnesia Collection is coming out for the PS4 next week,
I think.
So that includes the original game, Machine for Pigs, and also a DLC, single-player DLC they did for the original game called Justine, which I never got around to playing, so maybe actually that would be an excuse to finally get around to checking that out, because, you know, it's tough. I don't know what it would be like to play Amnesia now. Not because it's archaic or that it doesn't hold up, but because Amnesia is like single-handedly responsible for like a huge shift in the horror genre in the time from its release. I mean, the pinnacle of that is Alien. I'm forgetting the subtitle off the top of my
Isolation?
Head. Isolation, which is essentially a big budget take on Amnesia. Now the horror genre is kind of moving away from that. And also, like, so much hype is around that game. I wonder if it would be tough to, like, why do people think this was so interesting and scary? Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I wouldn't be surprised if sort of the ship has sailed for a lot of people in being able to enjoy it for what it is, because what it's become in a lot of people's minds is something different.
That's one of my thoughts on Machine for Pigs is I'm really curious if over the course of time that game doesn't hold up better necessarily, but people keep going back to it for more stuff. One of our freelancers, Cameron Kunzelman, wrote about Dear Esther last week and kind of like put aside the walking simulator question. Like, oh, walking simulators, ha ha. What else can you dig into this game to talk about? Like, what are the other conversations that we had around that game on its own merits besides it being a walking simulator? And I'm curious if Amnesia and Amnesia Machine for Pigs will be able to have that sort of work done around them, that sort of lasting effect beyond just for a few years, this is what horror games look like.
Right, yeah.
You know.
There is something else coming out next week on the 22nd called Morning Men. And I've been intrigued by this.
Like morning, like the morning, like it's good morning, like, not like I'm morning. In morning.
Not I'm very sad for America. No. it's Morning Men, and I don't know that much about it. I just know that I have been sort of keeping in mind that this is coming out. It has this sort of 80s comic book style to it. And I know there's certainly like a bent about supposedly about being a superhero and what that means.
Oh, interesting.
And what it means in this sort of weird alt future. Now, again, don't know that much about it, but I have had my eye on it.
Intriguing at the very least.
So
I think this is not next week, but it kind of went under my radar, which is Tyranny came out.
Oh,
and
that's
it didn't go under my radar so much as like Tyranny is the latest game by Obsidian, who made Knights of the Old Republic 2. And Tyranny exists is set in a world in which the bad guy, in which Sauron, in which the Sauron equivalent in this fantasy world wins and like takes over the world.
Evil has won.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's
just like today, just like 2016.
There's some parallels.
Yeah.
There are some. It's maybe why I didn't want to play it when it came out. It maybe came out with some poor timing. But I am curious about it because the character you play is basically a traveling like judge, jury, and executioner of this evil lord. And the kind of pitch on it is like, how do you work inside of a busted system to get things done that help everyday people when the overall system is fucked? And how do you do that without drawing the ire? Or do you just decide, fuck it, I don't care that the big bad is going to hate me too and I'm going to lose my position of authority? Like, what is that? How do you navigate that? How do you balance that? And that's a really cool pitch. I love Obsidian stuff. I actually never got around to Pillars of Eternity either, which makes me a bad fan of them. But I'm going to try to maybe dip into Tyranny this weekend a little bit and play some more Dishonored 2. Probably play some more Watch Dogs also. I'm still really high on Watch Dogs. There was a couple of missions that I thought dropped the ball a little bit. There were a couple more that did really well. So I'm like, I'm still like, I can't tell if they're going to stick the landing or not. And in general, like I've been having a lot of thoughts about whether or not, like how to talk about the way Watch Dogs does representation. So on one hand, I think it's really solid, and I think that, which I spoke about last week. But on the other hand, I'm like doing my best not to turn good instances of representation into like selling points. Like I don't want to reduce that to like, and that's why you should buy the game. Like I got a lot of people who said like, oh man, I'm going to buy Watch Dogs 2 because of the way you talked about it, which is like, cool, because I think I like this game a lot. I haven't finished it yet, and this is maybe one of the downsides of not doing reviews, right? Is like, I can say what my opinion is on something, just 10 hours into a 30-hour game, right? Or however long it ends up being. And so now it's like, ooh, is that the final – is that the takeaway I wanted people to have or not? So I'm still working through it, but I'm still, like I said, pretty high on it. I think that the – I figured out one of the things I really like, which is the fact that the areas don't feel like they are puzzled with solutions anymore. They now, because you have this drone that you can fly around in, instead of bouncing from just camera to camera to camera that are fixed positions, instead of feeling like a sliding puzzle, it feels like – there are a, it's like a not like a riddle, but like something that you can like play around with to get like a toy box more than a puzzle, and like that is a really interesting differentiation. So I'm going to play more of that this weekend too. So no things that are coming up next week have me super excited, but lots of stuff that came out over the past few weeks.
We've got plenty to do.
Plenty to do.
We already have homework.
Plenty to do. Yeah, let us know what you're doing. You can find us on Twitter at Waypoint. You can find us on Facebook at Waypoint Vice. I think. Find out. We need to go to our own...
We need to go to our
this
places.
This is bad. We're bad.
Yeah.
You got to go to your places.
Go to our places.
You can find us all over the internet, either Waypoint or Waypoint Vice. Where a lot of our 72-hour stuff has gone up. You can find that at waypoint.vice.com. You can find that at videos.vice.com. You can find that at our YouTube channel also, which I think is youtube.com/waypointvice. Yes, it is. So go check that out. If you've missed any of it, like seriously, there's some really great moments. We were just talking about Alien Isolation. We spent a night, Danielle, Patrick, and I playing that together. We actually played that twice, didn't we, Patrick?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's so much to go watch. And yeah, Waypoint Vice is us on Facebook. You can find me at Austin_Walker on Twitter. Danielle?
You can find me, Danielle or I, on Twitter.
And Patrick?
At Patrick Klubik. I'll make it easy.
That's easy. That's so easy. What should people send us?
Questions.
Questions at questions in the subject header, and then gaming@vice.com.
Yeah, not questions@vice.com.
Questions@vice.com. Send them in.
That's
don't do that. Don't do that.
I don't know where that's
going to
go.
Yeah, that goes nowhere, probably. And then, you know, I want to thank Bowen for letting us use his track, Miss You, which I didn't thank last week. I realized, like, oh no, I forgot to thank Bowen. You can get info on him at bo-en.info, and you can also give thanks to Adam, who is engineering our podcast in this room today, and thanks to Patrick, who I think is going to cut it up this week and edit it.
No,
and Danielle,
or me.
Danielle,
I might do it.
Right, you have something big to work on.
I do. Patrick, yeah, we got something we're trying to get out today.
We're trying to make moves. If not today, then soon.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us. I hope your weekends are wonderful. I feel like I'm forgetting something. I always do. I don't have my docs up because I'm looking at Patrick's face instead of at my
thing.
Thank
you for Patrick's
face. I should hold up a doc for you.
Hold up the doc that way just in case.
A little sign, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. Come back around on Monday. We'll have more to say. Have a good weekend. Peace.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.